Okay, so here we are, this year's edition of Profiles of Persecution, Ramban and the Disputation of 1263. So I remember it being in this room and actually finding once a biography of the Ramban. Seemed like a pretty good one, not one of these. And I was looking around for it, I couldn't find it. I haven't been able to find it in a while. You see it?
Yeah.
Where?
On that show, the middle one.
Can you show it?
Can you show it? I'm not sure that was the one that I... No, not that one. I know, that's not as great. There was like a real scholarly biography that I remember seeing, and it would have been helpful because there is material on the actual disputation, but the surrounding criteria, both before as well as after, I'm still a little vague on. So I would like to be able to tell the story more in full. I have a bunch of questions as to what exactly happened. You'll see what I mean. But here we go. The Ramban was born in the year 1194 in Girona, I think that's how you pronounce it. Girona? Girona, okay, in northwest. I'm hearing a lot of you, Miles. Okay, no, but mute's gonna put. Oh, Miles, can you put yourself on mute until you want to say something? Okay. Feel free to say anything if you want to chime in. But the Ramban was born in Girona, which is the northeast section of Spain, right? It's an hour and a half, I think about 90 miles or so from Barcelona. Barcelona was the capital of that area. Is that the area known as Catalonia today? Is that the... Like that might be separated. Okay, I wasn't sure about that. And he seemed like he lived and worked there. That was his home for most of his life. That's where he was born. That's where he learned. That's where he taught. That's where he became the rabbi. Other than him writing his works over most of his life, his main public thing outside of that sort of made him famous beyond just his halachic works, is that he actually attempted to resolve the major dispute about the Rambam's work. About the Rambam's philosophical works. There was a big fight going on at the time. He was asked to step in, not as a very old man, I think in his 40s or so, was asked to step in, and he sort of came to a compromise between the two sides, and the Jews were able to continue to live in peace with the works of the Rambam still intact. That was the, and that was his life, and the truth is his works of his first 60 years of his life were all halachic works, as far as I could tell. So most famously of the Ramban of his halachic works is his Perush on the Gemara. Right, there's a Chidush Ramban on the Gemara. There's the Chidush. There's the Ramban wrote the Melchamas Hashem on the Rif and arguing sort of defending the Rif against the attacks of the Baal HaMor mostly. And the Ramban was probably known mostly as a halachist. However, when we think about the Ramban today, the Ramban is probably most known for, at least in this room, he's most known for his commentary on Chumash. Right, the commentary on Chumash came later. We have an edition of that on that, right? Not on this shelf, but rather on that shelf, right? That is where the Ramban is most known. But until this point, until we get to the year 1260, that doesn't seem to be what he was mostly occupied with. So, 1263, he was called by King James of Aragon. King James of Aragon, I think that was the region, but he was living in Barcelona. He was brought to a disputation. What was the cause of that? What was going on at the time? What was the life for Jews like? So life for Jews at that time in Spain was pretty peaceful. It sounds like things were pretty good, not because Spain was peaceful. Spain was in a constant war between the Muslims and the Christians, right? It was going back and forth, not necessarily that part of Spain. I think that was mostly Christian. But they were emphasizing this back and forth. It seemed like both sides didn't really have time to deal with the Jews. So it didn't seem like the Ramban was involved in too many issues up until that point. At this point in history, the Christians were able to sort of more establish themselves, at least in that part of Spain. They were able to flex their muscles a little bit, as well. That was also the time of the rise of the Christian Empire. The Christian Empire itself was becoming much stronger. It became much stronger in Europe, in main part of Europe, early already, and that was demonstrated itself by the Crusades. Right? The Crusades were over 1,000 years before, right? But that was in that was in the main part of Europe, not really affecting in Spain. What are we looking at?
No. Actually, 1,000 years before.
100 years before. I'm sorry.
So this is actually taking place around Crusade time, too. It may not have,
the end of,
may not
this
have
is
been
sort
involved
of,
in it.
Right, after the Crusades. But if we also think about the attitude that took that was taking place, so the attitude of the Crusades in Europe, although most prominently was the First Crusade, that was where most of the destruction of the Jews took place. The Kina that we read about in Tisha B'Av happened during the First Crusade, which happened much earlier. But the attack on the Jews, the difficulties for the Jews in most of Europe was much worse than in Spain. Now, one can compare, and there is a book here that I was able to get a hold of. Not as much history as I would have hoped, but a book, Judaism on Trial, Jewish-Christian Disputations in the Middle Ages. And it talks about three disputations. The main two that it talks about is the disputation in Paris and disputation in Barcelona, which took place 20 years later. So the one in Paris, right, Rabbi Chiel meets Paris, that also we read about on Tisha B'Av morning. So that took place 20 years before this. And the attitude was much different as well. The attitude of the Paris disputation was, you guys are terrible, and the Talmud is terrible, contains all these blasphemies against the church, and you better make an attempt to defend yourself. But it was clear that it wasn't going to be a fair fight. As we get into this disputation, what the Ramban did, it wasn't the same way. There was more of an attempt to be somewhat even-handed, even though at the end of the day, things didn't quite work out as well as maybe would have hoped. Maybe it did work out as well as we could have hoped. Unclear. But the attitude was much different, certainly by the king. The king, this King James, was a little bit younger than the Ramban. It doesn't sound like he really had any issue with the Jews. The Jews were part of his kingdom. There were, but he, and I don't know enough to say about how what the relationship is with him and the Vatican. But the Vatican was sending these various impositions and placing these laws upon the Jews, and he was like, kind of ignoring them. He was saying, listen, I don't have time to deal with this. He would sometimes pass it on to his to some of his subsidiaries and say, like, you deal with this kind of stuff. But it doesn't sound like he had any issue with them. However, so the main person that the Ramban fought with was someone named, do we know the name? With a P? Pablo Cristiani, right? That name might sound familiar. Pablo Cristiani was a Jewish apostate. He was a Jew. He learned in yeshiva, therefore knew some Talmud, and was the one to bring. But he's just a guy. Like what standing did he have? So the standing that he have is that he grew into favor of someone named Raymond de Pennaforte. I think that's how you would pronounce it. Maybe that's Italian. I'm not sure how exactly to pronounce it. And he was the person who brought along Pablo Cristiani. And on the other side, he was the main person who was the, I guess, the Baal HaConfessions, the one who received confession from the king, from this King James of Aragon. And this King James apparently had many confessions to make. This Raymond de Pennaforte, little things you can find out by looking up Wikipedia, but the most interesting story is that he actually became a saint. He's Saint Raymond. That's him. And in order to become a saint, you have to be able to prove two miracles, right? One public and one private. So apparently his public miracle is that when King James was out conquering some land on some island, so he brought along his mistress with him. And Father Raymond, I guess, was not happy that he had brought this mistress with him, and told him, you better get rid of her, it's not right, you shouldn't be with her. And the king said, I'm not listening to you, she's staying right here, and stop bothering me about this, and I'll confess to you when I feel like it, or something. So Raymond said, well, I'm sorry, I'm leaving then, I'm not going to be used in that way, I'm heading out. And he said, well, you have no way out, we're on an island right now, and I hereby forbid every ship here to take you out, and if any ship, say, captain takes you, I'm going to destroy the ship and destroy the captain along with it. So Raymond goes to the story goes that Raymond went to the beach and held out his he had a staff and he had a cloak and he held his staff and his cloak and he sailed across the water. I forget the exact what the numbers were, but something like 100 miles in 6 hours, and when he arrived at the other end in mainline Spain, there were crowds of sailors all waving and cheering and very excited to see him. Hence, it was a public miracle. So anyways, that's his story. So he was a prominent person that was very much in touch with the Vatican. It sounds like he was the one who pressured King James to say, it's time that we have this mutation, it's time that we have it all out, and we have this fight with the Ramban, and we'll be able to prove ourselves that we're right and they're wrong and everything's and everything will be wonderful. Now, does King James want to do it? I don't know. That's the part that's vague to me. Why the Ramban? Were there other people around? Now, the Ramban was the Rebbe of the Rashba. The Rashba lived in Barcelona, so it seems like he should have been closer by. Actually, I didn't check what year the Rashba was born. The Rashba was a Talmud, though. So how exactly the Ramban was chosen over anyone else? It's a mystery. I don't know. Maccabee doesn't talk about it. I don't know. By the way, this Chaim Maccabee also, as we get into this, also... He is an author and dramatist, because he actually made up a play and movie called The Disputation, which isn't available in its entirety on YouTube. If you're interested, if you have an hour and a half free, maybe a Tisha B'Av afternoon activity, the entire movie is available. It's got like four characters in it. Like that's, it's like,
I think this has been viewed in this area maybe 10, 15 years ago. Oh. Mikveh Israel... on Tisha B'Av afternoon.
Okay.
And it sounds like when I saw
could
the title and everything, I remember
it could be. It was earlier. But all right. Anyways.
Okay.
But what there is a lot of rich literature about is the actual disputation. That it actually gets, why is there good literature about that? So the Ramban wrote it down. The Ramban sat down and he wrote a book at the end called the Vichuach HaRamban, the Disputation of the Ramban. It's published, it's on in most Batei Midrashim in Kisvei HaRamban, in Volume 1, and it's his recollection of how things went. Now, it's not going to be perfect because it was written after the fact. It wasn't like he said. There wasn't any stenographer there, and he wrote it afterwards. And wrote it afterwards specifically in response to the fact that people were lying about what happened at the disputation. So how historically accurate Maccabee has about a chapter trying to describe that? Some people have brought it down. There is a Christian version as well. That they wrote up, which he also happens to have in this book in English. Difficult to understand. And beyond that, it's also unclear, even though the Ramban wrote his recollections of the disputation, it's unclear if he wrote this recollection of the disputation.
Yes.
He wrote his, but he probably didn't write it in Hebrew. And this is written in Hebrew. This is written, the version that we have is in Hebrew. And in addition, there's... We'll point that right to the beginning, that there's already a challenge right off the bat to try to figure out that this would be like the official transcript that the Ramban would be putting out.
I was just curious whether the Perush and the Chumash was also written in Hebrew, or is that also...
No, that was written in Hebrew, and that was written later.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps my thinking is that it might be as a response to this. I mean, he realized after this... experience that there needs to be more written on Chumash and understanding that God it does and things like that.
So you think he wrote it in Spanish?
So he may have written in Spanish. I'm just a guy reading books here. But he suggests that it originally was written in Spanish for the public and then maybe it was written later on. Beyond that, the other thing that's a bit of a mystery is that when there was a problem, and we'll see, what ultimately got the Ramban kicked out of Spain was not the disputation, but rather his writing down of the disputation. And when he was kicked out, so they collected all the copies and burned them. So now, just because they burnt all the copies doesn't mean that one wasn't saved. But it could be that he just sat down. All right, fine, I'll write it again. And wrote it again a little bit later on, which may explain the bitterness of the first section that gets brought up. But it is just a fascinating document in terms of, like, he gives you the dates, he gives you the days of the week when it took place, and it's written in this back and forth style. It's entirely translated here. There is also a translation that in the Chevel Ramban, right? So the Chevel is, we'll put out this, he was the main editor, right? He's the king of Ramban. So he also, there is a translation of Kol Kisvei Ramban also. I'm not sure all of it, but at least most of it, which is available. So there are translations about this, and it gets studied in seminaries as well, from what I can tell from my search, seminaries meaning Christian seminaries, as well, just from seeing what people have been kind of about. Right? So that brings us to some of the interesting things that get spoken about over the course of the debate itself. So first, right off the bat, he quotes I'm not sure you want to call it famous or not so famous, Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. The reason is because it is in the cutout. It is the censor. Is one of these censor. Is probably the largest piece of censored Gemara that one can find in the fourth parak of Masechta Sanhedrin. So it has. You won't see it in the Vilna Shas, but you might see it in the newer editions. It sort of gets added. In fact, in these classic Vilna Shas, if you look at this page, they cut out from these words Tanu Rabbanan until the bottom of the page. And then it picks up mid-sentence in the middle of the next lot. Like if you didn't know that, and if you just had a regular Gemara 150 years ago, like you have no idea what's going on here. Right? It's just like all of a sudden nobody knows what's going on with that change until you add in the entire addition that was made. It's about 20 lines that's added into to the standard Gemara. I'll just read from the beginning here. Garcin b'Sanhedrin. This is the opening that the Ramban writes. So Garcin b'Sanhedrin Tanu Rabbanan he talmidim hayu lo li Yeshu, that there are five talmidim of Yeshu. Now who's Yeshu? Yeshu is the classic translation of Jesus. However. Right? And who's five? What's five? Five apostles, right? Etc. So the names don't match up. Masai, Nikai, Netzer, Uboni, Vesoda. Those are the names of the five apostles. And then the Gemara goes on and tells the story of Asua Lamasai, that they came to Masai. Amrule, Masai Yarag. They say, when are you going to be killed? Right? They'll say, Masai Avo Vere Pene Elukim. That, and they play a word on the, a play on words, right? This is not really a pasuk, but Masai Avo, when is Masai is going to come and see the face of God? Right, so Amar Luhu ain Masaya, right? He says, so Masai responds by saying, well, maybe Masai shouldn't be killed, right? Dixiv Masai Yamos Viavat Shemo, right? That that Masai, well, I'm sorry. It's he says to them, Masayarag, Dixiv Masayavo Verpenelkim, that I'm a good guy. So they say, no, in Masayarag, Masay will be killed, Dixiv Masayamus, Masay will, when will you die and his name will be erased, but they're translating it as Masay will die and his name will be erased. Right? And it goes through like that for all five of those names that are put out. Each one quotes a pasuk to say, no, I should be saved, because there's a verse that indicates I should be saved. And they respond by saying, no, there's a verse that indicates you should be killed, and then he gets killed. Now, is that talking about Jesus and his apostles? So the names don't exactly match up, and the times don't match up. It's unclear what this Gemara is talking about. It could be talking about something that's totally apocryphal. I'm not sure anybody really knows what this Gemara is referring to. But the Ramban sticks this right in the beginning of, well, I'm not sure to say the Ramban. This is placed right in the beginning of this book. So Makobi raises the point. He says, you know, I'm surprised, like, the authenticity of this paragraph nobody brings up. Why does anybody say, how could, like, this is a pretty clear reason. There's no way the Ramban opened up his discussion with in front of the king quoting this Gemara, right? That didn't happen. So how did this get added in? So it could have got added in by somebody later on, or could have got added in by the Ramban when the Ramban was really annoyed after all of his books were burnt, or something along those lines. So anyways, that's the first paragraph that's brought up, but it's sort of an introduction. It's not really...
So was it part of the disputation?
So he brings up, Makobi says, it can't be that was part of the disputation, especially because the next line, Bays, now it's a little hard to know what's where. In here, he numbers them. Now these are his numbers, right? Chevel, these are Chevel's numbers. He's the editor of the whole thing. I'm not sure who did that work. But Chevel numbers them. It's a little unclear. He points out, because he not only does he translate, he also gives you footnotes along the entire way. He points out that there's a few sections questions, and it's unclear who's talking to whom at that point. Yeah. Right? So at least it's Chevelle's version of what his understanding of what's going on. But he said, Siva usi Adonino. This is the Ramban talking. We'll go with B's here. Right? Adonino Amelech le'atoach im pare Paul, or fry Paul. That's what it is. Fry Paul, which is talking about Pablo Christiani. Right? Be'echelo b'funav b'Barcelona. Now I'm supposed to go and talk in front of the king to fry Paul in Barcelona. Onvo, Maria said, Esek misfatad ni ha-melech, im titnu li rishus l'daber kirtzonei. He says, look, I'll do what you want, but I have to be given permission to speak freely. Right? V'ani b'vakish rishus ha-melech v'rishus frey Ramon de Finaport. Right? And I also request that permission from the king, as well as from Fry, this Ramon de Pinaporte, the guy, the priest that we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. Right? The Chaver of Asher Bekan, and also his friends that are going to be there, right? There are going to be a bunch of people there. So, Ana Fry Ramon de Pinaporte, again, not sure how to pronounce it, but he responded by saying, yeah, you could say whatever you want, Uvilvad, this is Gimel, right? Uvilvad shlot daber bizyonos, as long as you don't say bizyonos. Now, what are bizyonos? So we understand bizyonos as being mockery, right? As long as you don't make fun of us. But it's not, it's really talking about heresy, right? You can say whatever you want, as long as you don't say anything heretical against the church, right? To which the Ramban says, well, like, it's not going to work very well.
It's not going to work because...
Right, the whole thing's going to be heretical.
It's a heresy.
Correct. Now that's, by the way, that's what happened to Yechiel Miparis. He couldn't get this agreement. Yechiel Miparis, they said, listen, you can say whatever you want as long as it's not heretical. And if it is heretical, well... then that'll be it, right? You'll get the punishment for saying something heretical, right? That's what. Right? So this is a demonstration of the sort of the more power that the Ramban had. So the Ramban responds by saying, "Amarti lehem ini rotzel lius bedinchem al zeh asher beomer kol ritzoni beinian havichuach kasher etem omerim kol ritzonchem vani yishli das l'davar bederech musar aval beratzu nafshi yiyeh." Says, "Look, I'm not sure what I, you know, what I'm going to say, and what I'm not." But I have to be able to say, you know, it might be heretical to you, right? But I have to be given permission to say, I have to be able to say what I need to say. So therefore they came back to say and said back to me, fine. Well, hold. Leave Hay out. But not sure what that was. What?
No, just go on.
Okay, so then we go on to Vav and say Vanu Kula Vamru. So they said Yafa Amarta. Uvechin Hiskamnu Ladaber Tchila. So he said, fine. So he said, okay, we're ready to go. But now. This is what we're about to say. So v'chin hiskimnu l'daber, they begin to say, we're going to agree to speak about the following things. Right? This is Vav. Techila b'inyan ha-Mashiach. We're going to speak about the idea of Mashiach. What about the idea of Mashiach? In kfar ba b'fi emunah ha-notzrim oim hu asid lavo kemunah ha-yehudim, if it already came as the Christians suggest, or if it's going to come like we suggest, or like the Jews suggest, v'achari kain, or Nedaber im ham, and then afterwards we'll speak about Nedaber im Hamashiach hu Eloha Mamish. Do we assume that Mashiach is a god? Oim hu ish gamor nolan mi ish vishur. Is he a human, like a human born from man and woman? Ba'achar kach Nedaber, they're going to speak im Yehudim machzikim b'Torahs ha'amitis or anotzim osim mosar. Are the Jews the right, doing the right Torah, or are the Christians right? So great. So that's the table of contents for the discussion. So then, so now Fry Paul gets up and says, "Well, now we want to talk about. We're going to start talking about now about the idea that Mashiach has already come." So Anisi via Marti, this is Ches. He says, "Now I'm going to give my first argument." He says, "About Kodem Sheni Tuchayach Bazeh and Uvaki Shirani Viomerli Heach Zebe Efshar." He says, "Before we get started about this, right? You're going to bring me these proofs that somebody." Already was Mashiach. I just have a question: how that could be possible? Because
now this is
the Ramban talking. Yeah, okay. Aniti, right? This is the Ramban talking. Okay. So I said, okay. Right? Kimi as shamelch b'fravancia uva mukomos rabim shemati she'amr v'davar azel la'yehudim rabim v'ani tema b'mod. I've heard that many kings have said this to many to the king of Provence and others have said to many people, and it drives me like I'm astonished by it. Because Vayaneni Bazeh Hayirza Lomar Ki Chachmi Atalmud Mamidim BeYeshu Shu Mashiach VeMinushu Ish Gamar VeLo Ms Kifi Machshav Asanotzu. Says because what you're going to claim, right? But part of the claim of the Christians is that they go through the Talmud and they find all of these statements of Agartha that seem to indicate that you see that they really knew that that the Jews were that Jesus was really the King and was really Mashiach, etc. And they put it in code throughout the Talmud, right? That's your claim. Because I don't understand. Because everybody knows, right, Yeshu was during the time of Bayit Sheni, and he was already killed way before the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Right? And the Chachmei Talmud were after the destruction. Rabbi Kiva and his friends were all later. Those people that actually wrote the Mishnah, Rabbi Nassim, they were even after that. And certainly Rav Ashi, right? The people who wrote the Talmud, they're even after that, right? We're talking about hundreds of...
Is that yours?
Yeah. We're talking about hundreds of years since the time that Jesus was killed. That's when the Talmud was written. He says, "Vim hayu," and this is the underlined part. "Vim hayu ha'chacham ma'il ma'min b'mashichus Yeshu v'shu emes." Right? If these chachamim believed, right, in that that Jesus was Mashiach and that he was right, the munasav v'dasu emes, what he's believed in, what he thought in was right. "Vim hayu heim kosum hadvar ma'il asher frei Paul omer shiuchich mehem kach." And you're telling me that they believed in Jesus, they believed he was Mashiach, they believed he was right, and they put in all of these hidden things in the Talmud. So why do they stay as Jews? Right? What was in it for them? Right? Why would you tell me that Rav Ashi is sticking these things into the Gemara, indicating that, oh, by the way, between us, he really is. What's in it for him to stay Jewish, right? What was the goal at that point? He was on a little bit with that at the end of the paragraph. It doesn't really get answered. Like, oh, at the end of that very point, okay, let's go. I have a couple of proofs though that seem to indicate it. If you go, that question doesn't seem to get answered at any point by Frey Paul, at least not in the Ramban's version of the Vichuach. Okay, so I'll go through a couple of other themes that one sees throughout the book. One is this idea of the use of text. So this is still early on, Yud Aleph. So he comes and says, this is number two here, where it says Yud Aleph. This part I have the translation in here. Problem is with the translation, it just takes up too much space. It was easier to put in the Hebrew than the English, but lend you the book, and some of the English is here. But they bring a proof from a pasuk in the end of Bereishis, where he says, "Lo yasur shevet mihudam uchukeik mivin raklav ad ki avo shilo," that the scepter is never going to leave from Yehuda or from his descendants until someone comes from Shiloh. So comes Pablo Christiani and says, so what is that? That, well, there's no king anymore, right? When did the king stop? The king stopped at Kievo Shiloh, until someone came from Shiloh. Shiloh is someone near Bethlehem. I don't know. It's out there someplace. Right?
It's in the north.
What?
It's in the north. It's not in
Shiloh is
in Samaria, not in Judea.
But he's claiming
Shiloh
is the Mashiach.
Anyway. Not sure. Oh, Shiloh is the Mashiach. That's what you're saying. Okay. Shiloh is going to come. So he's going to claim that Shiloh... I thought it was a reference to it. But okay, until Shiloh is the Mashiach. Until he actually is going to come, and he's going to be the king. To which the Ramban responds by saying, Yudbezen, need to be a marti. That's not what it means. Inkavana navi lomar shaloti amachas yehud debatele klal. Vishum bazman. Doesn't mean, when the pasuk says, the navi is referring to Yaakov Avinu. Right, when Yaakov said that the kingdom is not going to stop, it didn't mean that it's not going to have any interruption. It just means that there's not going to be another king until that point. Right, but the kingdom is going to be able to continue ad Kievo Shiloh until that point. Right? That's what he means. So and he says not only that, but the timeline doesn't make sense either, because the end of the kingdom of Yehuda was the end of Bayis Rishon, the first Beis Hamikdash, right? That's several hundred years before you get to this period. Anyways, he says, and if you're going to say it's until the Jewish kingdom died, well, the Jewish kingdom died after after the time that Jesus was dead already. Right? So the timeline's not going to fit with regard to that pasuk. So comes Paul, turns around and says, and Yigamli says, yeah, but I have a Gemara. The Gemara tells in the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin that it quotes that pasuk and says that that's not just a reference to the kings, but also a reference to the Anshei Knesset HaGadol and the Rabbanim and those people that had Smicha, etc. And that went approximately until that time. So he responds and says, so he responds by saying, says, yeah, but that Gemara is not talking about political ruling. That's talking about religious ruling, and those religious rulers were the were those that were appointed via the political class. So it's coming from Yehuda, and therefore it's not relevant to this issue. So you have a pasuk and his response. You have then his Gemara trying to prove the pasuk, and then you have the Rabban's response to that as well. Another thing, and this gets quoted, sort of comes out of this and gets quoted regularly, and it's one of the things that people wonder about, did the Ramban really mean this? The next two things are things that when the Ramban said for the purpose of debate, did the Ramban really mean it, or the Ramban just saying that in order to sidestep a specific question? So here he says, so Paul comes and says, that he quotes in Agada in the Medrash, in Medrash Eicha, that there was this person that he was out with his mules, and someone came and said to him, Bar Yudai, Bar Yudai, Shari Torascha, Shari Padnecha, Shari Kankanecha, Vizkar Beis HaMikdash. So they came and said that everything's gone, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Shara Tortira, Shara Pardere, Shara Kankane, says, and these things are... Gosman Chaninus, and these things are all gone. So Amar Lei, 1 second.
I'm sorry, where are you on these?
I'm on number three on the next page.
The
issue, right? The issue with regard to God. Oh, 1 second here. Let me just pull this out here. So he's probably, untie your cow, untie your plow, and untie your coulter. I'm not sure what that means. The temple is destroyed. So he untied his cow, he untied his plow and his coulter. The cow cried a second time. And then the Arab said to him, oh, don't worry, right? Aser Torascha means tie up your cow, tie up your plow, tie up your coulter, because the Mashiach has been born. So what's that? What's he trying to say? He's trying to say that, oh, you see, the Mashiach was already born at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. So the Ramban responds by saying, V'Anvomar responded to him and says, Eini mamin bagada zuklal avarai hula devarai. Because I don't believe in that God. Right? So the Ramban just kind of throws it out. So that line is a fascinating line, right? What does it mean the Ramban just says, I don't care about that God. He turns around and says, but anyways, it's proof to me. We'll get to that in a second. But what did he mean by, don't bother me with these Agadahs? So what Maccabees suggests is that the Ramban obviously believed in Agadah. The Ramban obviously believed in the entire Gemara. But he didn't necessarily assume, right, it didn't necessarily mean that you now prove... You can prove things from Agartha. Agartha is ways of thinking and suggestions of thought, and could be open to various interpretations. So he comes along, so Pablo Christiani comes along and says, oh, I have a proof from this Agartha. Ramban says, I'm not bothered by that. Well, you can understand that Agartha plenty of ways. He says, yeah, but how can you prove that I'm not right? Which Ramban's like, oh, I don't have to prove you're not right. that's not part of my job in talking about the Agata. When it comes to Allah, you have to prove a case. Agata's going to be open to interpretations. So Ramban says, I'm not bothered by it. Then he continues on and says, but anyways, I'm not bothered by what you're bringing. Was the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed 40 years after Jesus was killed, right? So anyways, your question on me from that Agata rather than being a proof for you, ends up being a proof for me. But the line of it appears several times over the course of the text here of, oh, I'm not bothered by that Agadah, kind of like makes you do a little bit of a double take right away, but that the Ramban doesn't mean I don't believe in it at all. It's just not going to be relevant for the arguments that we're talking about right now. And then another line that he has here with regards to where he sort of doesn't seem to be bothered by Mashiach either, right? He says, Amati Ani, this is on the top right of the page, Adoni HaMelech Shemati Mat, Ein HaDin VeEmes HaMishpat Shelanu Ikri B'Mashiach. He says, yeah, Mashiach's not that important to us. That's literally what it means. Do I have it here? Yeah. The Mashiach is not fundamental to our religion. Right, what do you mean it's not fundamental to our religion? He says, plus you're worth more to me than Mashiach. Plus you're a king, and he's a king. You're a non-Jewish king, he's a Jewish king. And Mashiach is only a king of flesh and blood like you. Right? Meaning Mashiach is only a person. Right? When I serve Hashem in your territory in exile and affliction and servitude and reproach for the peoples who reproach us continually, my reward is great. Plus I'm offering sacrifice to Hashem, for which I shall be found more and more worthy of the life of the world to come. But when there will be a king of Israel, my religion ruling over all the people, there will be no choice for me but to remain in the Jewish religion, my reward is not going to be as great. So in a way, the Ramban is, what's Ramban suggesting? Ramban is suggesting we're better off now than it will be then, right? Which is a wild comment. Now, some could raise the point and say, oh, he's just downplaying Mashiach for the purpose of the debate. But the truth is, there's another book that the Ramban wrote in the Kisvei HaRamban. It's right before this. It's called the Sefer HaGeula. Sefer HaGeula is where he talks about some of these things, where he repeats pretty much the same line. Where he says that, yeah, Mashiach's not that important. Our focus is serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Mashiach will come when Mashiach comes, right? So does Ramban mean that Ramban deny that Mashiach is one of the Yud Gimli Kari Amuna? No, he's not denying that. He's just saying, in terms of our practical relevance, it's not that important. I mean, as opposed to the Christians who believe it was essential that it happened, otherwise we wouldn't be here, and we have to believe in that. He says, with regards to us, or you have to believe in that. With regards to us, it's something that is yet to come, and when it comes, it will come. But until then, that's not our focus. Our focus is figuring out what the job is in front of us to do. As we just continue the story here with regards to the ending is very famous. He at the end, the king, I forget if this actually happened in... Yeah, that in here in Kuf Beis is Inyan Havichukim Kulam. He says, "Yeah, that's all we have to say." There were four different days. It's all hard. It's not divided in chapters in here, except yeah, in the beginning of a section where it's a new day. It says, "And this was Monday, right?" And it's 4 days over a week and a half. And on the end, he says here, "Zeh Inyan Havichukim Kulam Lo Shanisi Behem Davar Ledaiti Achri Kim Bo Bayom Amati Lifnei Adonai Amelach Amar Yishar." Right, and finally, when it was over, the king said to me, "I think we're done here, because I've never seen anybody who's so wrong be able to give such good arguments." That was what the king said to him. And I heard that the king and his people wanted to come to shul on Shabbos. And really, this is wild. This is 13th century Spain. Right, and the king and his group and the religious group, they want to come to shul. But he's like, the Ramban's like annoyed, because then that meant I was going to be stuck in Barcelona for another 8 days and couldn't go home. All right, so they weren't just coming to give him a yashikalach. They actually came and gave another speech. And this actually became a theme. Pablo Christiani, both before and afterwards, would go to shuls and proselytize. Right, that's the word. And he would go and he would proselytize. Now, why would the shul let Pablo Christiani in to proselytize? Because they didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice. And just like this, they didn't have a choice. And they came in, they had to listen to a speech. Now, there's one more little argument that goes back and forth here. Where the Pablo Christiani talks about that one has to have an absolute belief in the Trinity, to which he says, but even the angels don't understand. To which the Ramban says, even the angels don't understand it, how could you possibly believe in it? Now it's an interesting translation. How could you believe in something which you don't know? which is not a great translation. We could believe in something which you don't know, but that's what the Ramban said. I mean, how could you believe in something which you can't possibly, which you yourself say is incomprehensible? That's really what the Ramban was saying. And the other and the others kind of said, "All right, Pavel, like just sit down. Like that's enough out of you. Like we're done." And the way it's told in the story is that the king gave 300 gold pieces to the Ramban, which was bothering him. How did he take it on Shabbos? Right. So he said, "No." If you look at the end here, he says, and the next day I went back to the king's palace and he said, you could go back to your city in life and in peace. He gave me 300 gold pieces and I left with him with much love, and Hashem should give me, it's a little bit of a code points out that people were a little unclear whether he was wishing him, giving himself a bracha or giving the king a bracha, but either way he gave somebody of bracha and said you should have a good long life. Now things did not work out very well. That's the end of the Ramban's thing here. Now the way the story seems to be worked out, this is an undated manuscript, but seems to have happened is that the Ramban went home and the Jews were like, you know, like Hudemaisa or Vesimchasos and Yikar, just because they wouldn't be killed and forced to. They felt like they were given a reprieve. But the Christians or the Dominicans went around saying that we won. The Ramban made a fool of himself and we're right, etc. That's where the Ramban felt compelled to write this. The Ramban then gets accused by the Dominicans of writing heresies. To which the Ramban says, "I'm only writing down what we said. It should be included in the original heter that I was allowed to say whatever I wanted and wouldn't be accused of heresy for these things." To which the response was, "No, we didn't say that. We only said you could say whatever you wanted. We didn't say you could write whatever you wanted." So the king is like, my read of this is the king is like, I don't have a problem. Leave me out of this. But he was pressured to the point that he told the Ramban, "Like it's out of my hands. You got to go." Which raises interesting questions about what the power struggle was between the Vatican versus the kings on the ground. The Ramban wandered for three. The way it's recorded is wandered through Provence and southern France for 3 years, which is a long time, before making his way to Eretz Yisrael. He wrote a couple of other books as well. There's a book, there's a little pamphlet, which is the next section after the Vichuach and the Kisvei Ravan, called the Bir Parsha, Hine Yaskil Avdi. What is Hine Yaskil Avdi? What's that referring to? That I'm your servant is prepared to serve, to suffer on your behalf, which is talking about a chapter in Yeshaya, which is one of the main Christian books, you know, things that they bring up.
Suffering servant.
The suffering servant, right? You've heard of the suffering. Have you all heard of the suffering servant? I never heard of the suffering servant until Googling it. Okay, it is a parak in Yeshaya where there's a nevuah of a servant suffering in order to save people. That's what it seems to be. So the Ramban writes about here that's here and translated here how it's not about a servant suffering. It's either about, it's talking about the entire Jewish people suffering, or maybe Mashiach himself suffering later on, but it's not talking about a servant who did suffer. And he wrote an entire parish talking about that. And there's some other things as well that he wrote, it sounds like, to sort of tie some loose ends together from this. But most famously, it doesn't, and I didn't see anybody who put it together, but in that period of his life, he then wrote the parish Ramban al Chumash, which seems like it should fit in like as a response to this. I mean, until this point I was halachist, I see the need to go through texts and give a proper understanding of the text. I took a quick look in the introduction of the Ramban al Chumash. I didn't see any particular reference to that this is the reason, but it could very well be an underlying possibility. He did not live very long after. He died in 1170. He lived 3 years in southern France, then he made his way to Eretz Yisrael. There's a famous letter that he wrote from Eretz Yisrael back home to I'm not sure why his family didn't go with him either, but he sent the letter back to his children in Spain, where he famously writes that I got to Yerushalayim and there's only two Jews in the entire Yerushalayim and they bring other people in for a minyan on Shabbos. that's here. He founded the Beis Knesset HaRamban. The Beis Knesset HaRamban, if you go into the old city today, there's a Beis Knesset HaRamban. That's not it. That is the shul. That is the congregation, so to speak, but it's not where he originally was. The Ramban originally founded his shul. This is not in the Wikipedia article, but it was in the tour guide that we had when I was in Israel a month and a half ago. We were by the Beis Knesset HaRamban. His name escaping me. Adam Berger. And I just sent him a quick email today just to confirm. But the official Beis Knesset HaRamban is probably several hundred meters south on Har Tzion, probably right outside the gate, the Shar Tzion. There's like a flat area over there. That's probably where the original Beis Knesset HaRamban was. It was moved to where it is now, though not much later, though, about 150 years later or so. That's an old building. It's actually if you go there, you take a couple steps down. That was required because you had to be lower than any mosques in the area. All right, so that is the Beis Knesset HaRamban, but it's still his sort of the congregation that he founded did continue on to be there. And then he actually left Yerushalayim to go to Akko. It sounds like he just couldn't. There weren't any Jews really in Yerushalayim, so he went to Akko, which was a trading point. Probably there'd be more Jews around. He seemed to find a few Talmidim and people to learn with and people to work with and some interesting people to have conversations with, but passed away soon after. He didn't live much long after that. He's buried in someplace unclear. Some people came, I think, Akko, Yerushalayim, Chevron, Shechem, or Haifa. I think they're near Haifa. Those are the several possibilities where he's buried. I'm not sure if there's a matzeif in any of those places or all of those places, but that is that's the Ramban, the story of the Ramban. So he had a pretty peaceful life, and then all of a sudden things are just run into turmoil by this Vichua, which he seemed to be successful in, and gave us a very helpful amount of literature, but ultimately led to a difficult end life for the Ramban. Stop here. Next week, it's not it's maybe not such a famous character, the Munkacher Rebbe. It's an amazing story. So, if you want just coming attractions for next week's the Munkacher Rebbe.